Welcome to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman. In a special episode, we'll be looking back at the halfway part of the season with our mid-season review. Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham will be joining me, along with Emilio Danello, and they will be sharing their thoughts on the season so far. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show. First, Mr. Danello, how are you doing?
Hi there, Russ. Happy holidays. Happy Christmas, Russ, and to you, Scott, as well. Life's good, you know. I've got a few days off work, so chilling out a bit this week, you know, off the back of a couple of Fulham back-to-back victories. So, yeah, looking forward to doing the show again. Mindful of the fact that we did one about 6 weeks ago when we were debating whether Slav should stay in situ or not. So it'd be good to see, you know, at the time, if I recall, we both thought he should be given more games. Right. I think that's proven to be the right decision. But let's see. It's only two consecutive wins, so let's not. Let's not get carried away. But yeah, looking forward to doing the show and, you know, looking forward to the next few months of what we can achieve at the club.
I look forward to talking to you guys about this. Again, before we go any further, Mr. Tanfield, how are you doing?
I'm very well, Russ. Happy holidays to you. Happy Christmas. I'm great. Nothing really much to moan about over this period. We've got two back-to-back wins, but I'm sure we'll find something.
I'm sure we will, guys. I really do. And we're going to do this a couple of different ways. We are actually going to rate the positions along with rating Slavica halfway through the season and also Tony Khan. Then for our mid-season review, we have several topics we're going to go through. And then at the very end, we will end with talking about the second half of the season, what our expectations are. But before we do anything, let's just start with opening thoughts on halfway through the season. We are one game beyond that, but basically we're talking about a little over halfway through. Scott, open thoughts on the season so far. I see it as a disappointment. I had much higher expectations than where we are right now. I'm disappointed. What is your view of the first half of the season?
Yeah, I mean, I'm disappointed. I think most fans are. I mean, was it to be expected to be where we are now? I didn't expect us to be, but if we look back, and we always seem to go back to this, if we look back at the summer activity, yep. I kind of feel we are where we are with that squad. I feel that there was a lot of unbalance there. You know, we didn't go and get the key players that we wanted. I think, you know, Savita had to sort of juggle things around. You know, players have gone, they've not been replaced. And again, we've had a little bit of kind of upheaval behind the scenes again. And, you know, personally, I think that's kind of dumped us exactly where we are now, if I'm honest.
Okay, excellent there, Scott. Emilio, your thoughts on the first half of the season?
Yeah, I think it has been an extremely disappointing start. You know, we've, you know, Scott sort of said a lot of the things I was going to say. It's all the unrest behind the scenes that's filtered onto the pitch. You know, the investment hasn't been particularly good, as we all know. Some of the players are, you know, effectively out of their depth and not really this level, but you know, it's not all doom and gloom. You know, we're still in mid-table. I think that's the right position. That's where we should be. You know, we're not scoring many goals. You know, our goal difference is barely above zero. So, you know, we've won as many games as we lost. What does that tell you? We're a mid-table team at the moment, but there's upside there. We're approaching the transfer window. Things can only get better. But let's be very frank. You know, after we saw the pre-season in July and all, you know, in July in particular, you know, expectations weren't particularly high for me. I had more expectations in June, but once we saw the players that were signed, the very, very poor pre-season, it didn't bode well. And obviously, we are where we are now. But let's look up, not down, and hopefully we can start 2018 as well as we started 2017. So fingers crossed.
Okay, excellent there. All right, guys, let's rate the positions. Let's start with goalkeeper. Scott, I'm going to start with you from 1 to 10. Rate the position so far this season.
I mean, if we're talking about how we've utilised both and if we talk about both Bettinelli and Button, this has been a kind of a situation all season, isn't it? Where one's preferred to the other, you know, one's got better attributes than the other. I mean, for me personally, and I'm still in that kind of mind, that it's kind of the best of a bad situation that we've got. I felt that we moved into the season with a position that we should have invested in. We should have bought a goalkeeper that kind of fitted Djokanovic's style of play, one that was good with his feet. But what we tend to have got is, I mean, Bettinelli seems to be the better shot stopper. For me, Button seems to be a little bit better with his distribution. But it's a situation there where we don't seem to have an experienced championship winning goalkeeper. Muddled around with them. I'm going to give that position a 4 for the season. 4.
Okay. Okay. So you're pretty down on the goalkeeper situation. But to be fair, Scott, you've been saying that for a very long time. This isn't the first time you're talking about needing a goalkeeper. You have been consistent. So you are being consistent there. Emilio, with the goalkeepers, your thoughts?
Yeah, I think both very average, let's be very honest. The fact that Bertinelli was linked with Chelsea a couple of years ago is still very shocking, to be honest. I'm still surprised by that. But both are very average. Like, both have got their own individual attributes. You know, I think Barton actually was one of our better players in the first, up to around October, November time. You know, in the first 3 months of the season, I thought he saved us in a lot of games, was called upon. He actually did his job well. But Button seems to always have a problem when we're under the cosh, when we're winning 1-0, come out in the second half, sitting back, we then start passing the ball backwards and forwards. He gets a little bit nervous, the ball doesn't drop to his feet. That's when panic starts to settle in. And, you know, at times, you know, that's where I've seen Button in particular sort of struggle with his distribution, with his kicking. But normally, if we're playing with a lot more confidence, a lot more, you know, a lot more passion and flair, then I think Button was hard. You know, I think I would have dropped him. To be totally honest, I think he made a couple of mistakes against Brentford, but I think he was harshly dealt with. You know, in my opinion, Bertinelli's come in. You know, he had a very, very poor game at the weekend, but I didn't see him get much criticism on Twitter, on social media. So let's be very honest, they're both very average. 5 out of 10 for me, but, you know, at the end of the day, Bertinelli's probably got more of a, more passion, creates a little bit more spark in the team because of his love and passion for the club. But Button, I think overall, I prefer Button to Bertinelli, personally speaking, of the two.
Okay, excellent there. Emilio, right back to you. Let's talk about the fullbacks, left back and right back. So that includes Dennis Adoy, Ryan Fredericks, and Ryan Sessegnon. Just rate the fullbacks here.
I'm going to sort of rate them 6 out of 10 this season. I think, you know, we've got, you know, Adoy's proved that he can play in multiple positions, which is a positive in terms of our squad. Fredericks having a fairly solid season. You know, at times I'd like to see him push up a little bit more and use his pace to better advantage, but maybe it's tactics from the bench that he's been told to sit back and don't stretch himself unnecessarily. And Sessegnon is, I think, he's had a fairly disappointing season in defence. You know, I know he's playing week in, week out, you know, but at the moment, you know, a lot of times he's been caught out, he's been out-muscled, been at fault for a number of goals that we've conceded. So in his eyes, he'll probably see the fact it's been a fairly disappointing season defensively. So overall, net-net, I'd probably say, you know, 5.5, 6 out of 10 for our fullbacks, but my worry is Fredericks or Adoy, one of those two gets injured, then where's our cover?
Yeah,
we haven't got enough cover in that position. So that's a concern for me. You know, okay. Fredericks has stayed with it all season, so assessing you on, but to take one or two of those, both getting injured, then we're going to struggle.
That's a good point there. Over to you, Scott.
Yeah, I thought I'll go with Emilio on this and give him around about a 6. I mean, you look at, Fredericks has been kind of sort of average this season. I still think that he's probably one of our better fullbacks in that position. The only problem I seem to have with him at the moment is that he tends to, when he does go on his runs, he tends to hold on to the ball a bit too much. Rather than sort of whipping that cross in, he tends to try and beat that man to the last 9 seconds.
Good
and
point.
Our strikers, or strikers as we call them, are then out of position and we've wasted chances. I would like to see him sign a new contract. I do think that at the age of 24, he's kind of someone that if we improve this squad in this second half, he's someone that will flourish. And I think what Milo was saying, sometimes he kind of sits back a little bit, but then I do think that's because I don't think he has a lot of cover there, you know? Sessegnon, we know... Yes, he's had a bit of a poor season this season, but he's been one of the most contributors every single game. But we know he's not naturally a left back, and he's a target. Dennis Adoy, you know, what can I say about him? I mean, preferably I would have him in and push Ryan Sessegnon further up, but for some reason the coach just doesn't like him or doesn't trust him. He seems to prefer him when he comes in, you know, as a centre back. So. And again, from what Milo was saying there, we are very short in them positions. We do get an injury, like to a Ryan Fredericks, and we really are under the cosh there, you know?
Absolutely. That's a good point.
We don't have any colour. I'm hoping that, you know, maybe a left back in January, you know, but we'll see. But I'm going to go for the full backs. Yeah, I'm going to go for a 6.
Okay, excellent. right back to you, Scott. Let's talk about the center backs. For the majority of the time, it's been Tim Ream and Tomas Kalas. We've had Dennis Adoy play it at certain times, but basically it's the two of them, and we really haven't seen much of Jallo. We've seen him a few times, but really it is about Ream and Kalas. So rate the center backs here.
Yeah. Again, another problematic position that I felt that we needed to kind of improve in over the summer. I've got nothing against Tim Ream, and I've got nothing against Kalas, but they are both similar players. For me personally, I think what we lack in that side is that type of Haglund-Hughes partnership.
We've
got somebody as, you know, a kind of an aerial type defender, but then somebody that's good that can push in, obviously cover across the floor. Whether this is Djokanovic's style of play, I find Tim Ream and Kalas to both be, you know, sort of floor playing centre backs. And it's been proven time and time again when, you know, sort of things from set pieces or when teams do go long, we do tend to suffer. Both are not very aerial, you know. I don't feel we've had the best out of the pair of them. Tomas Kalas hasn't been as good as he was last season. Tim Ream, you know, he still contributes with, for such a composed centre-back, still contributes with the biggest howlers of the season. I mean, that one against Bolton, I can't forgive. I just don't know what was going on there, you know. So for me, I'm going to go for a 5.5 for the centre back.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Emilio, over to you. I want to get your thoughts. Scott actually just brought up something interesting, and it's actually a very good point. Kalas and Ream are similar. Do we need complementary centre backs? We've talked about this before. Centre backs are a little bit different. He brought up Haglund and Hughes. I think that's a great point. What are your thoughts on that? And also give the centre backs a rating too.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. I think what we don't have is that sort of commanding central defender who runs a box, good vision, good communication with the goalkeeper. I often see there's lack of dialogue between the goalkeepers and the centre-backs, literally at times. You know, should I pass? Should I not pass? Should I go forward? Should I not go forward? Should I distribute, not distribute? It just seems to be a lack of cohesion between the goalkeepers and the centre defender. You just see them live on the pitch. There seems to be a lack of dialogue between the goalkeeper and the centre backs, and that doesn't bode well. And both are very similar, you know. Both don't necessarily command their box particularly well. Kalas, I think, has been the worst defender in 2017 of the two. When I say 2017, I mean from January last year to now, or January this year to now. I think he's been the worst of the two since around February time. I've said it time and time again. I thought Tim Ream was our best central defender from February to the end of the season. And he's shaded it for me this season, net, in terms of less mistakes and probably more composed than Kalas. Kalas has disappointed me this season, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, hopefully now the worst is over. But the fact that we're still conceding sloppy goals, sometimes they're both caught out of position, their reading of the ball when it gets floated into the box isn't particularly good. So we don't have that central dominant finger in defence, like a hangman, like Scott was saying, but at the moment, I'd rate them both, you know, 5 out of 10, to be honest. I think the fact that we still have problems in that position, we haven't reinvested, and I'm not sure if Tomas Kalas is strategically the right person either. I think from February this year to now, he's been fairly average, to say the least. Forget the previous 5 months. Tomas Kalas has not been the best, to be honest. He'll be disappointed. So will many fans be disappointed with his performances.
Okay, excellent there, Emilio. Right back to you. Let's now talk about the midfield. There are obviously a good amount of players. I was trying to figure out the best way to do this because Fulham tend to play a 4-3-3, but we're just going to treat the midfielders as a unit and then the strikers being separate. So when we're talking about the midfield, we can talk about Stefan Johansson, Tom Kearney, Kevin McDonald, Oliver Norwood, but I'm also going to include players like Floyd Ayite, Shea Ojo, and Niskins Cabano as just part of the midfield. So give this group a rating here.
You know, if we look at it on paper, you know, we should be dominating teams with that midfield. You know, we've got enough cover there, enough experience, international experience, got pace, we've got quality, we've got leadership there. But to be honest, if we actually rate collectively as a unit, I think we can only give them 6 out of 10 so far this season. The fact that you've had Tom Kearney's been injured for a lengthy period of time, you've had Stefan Johansson off the boil at times. You know, Floyd Ayite, okay, in and out of games, picked up an injury. Ojo, injured. Cabano's more of a sort of off-the-bench type of impact player rather than actually starting 11. And Kevin McDonald is probably the best of that bunch. So we haven't dominated teams in midfield this season. Yes, possession wise, the team we're still in the high 60s or mid 60s, but net, I think there's been too many injuries, too many changes, too many suspensions. It's just been a little bit inconsistent. Well, and some players have underperformed. So I can only give it 6 out of 10 based on how they've performed from the start of the season to now. But hopefully things are starting to turn for the better. But
right,
you know, the last 4 months, I think everyone will be disappointed in terms of what contribution they've put together. You know, like I said, too many inconsistent performances, injuries in particular. That's what we got away with last season. We've had too many injuries in that position, and that's naturally impacted our ability to dominate and win games.
Listen, it's a great point, and if we're being honest here, we are rating it for half a season. So the performance yesterday was much better, and that's encouraging. But I'm glad that you're talking about the inconsistent play, because it's over the course of half of season. But like you mentioned, Emilio, injuries have been a factor here, but overall it just hasn't been consistent enough. And Kevin McDonald has been the most consistent out of all these players we're talking about. So I understand why you rated it that way. Scott, what are your thoughts about the midfield here?
Yeah, I mean, I think Emilio's touched on quite a bit that I was going to say there, to be honest. I mean, out of a sort of a very average poor season, I think our midfield has been, you know, kind of the better performing unit. And as Emilio says, I think with all that quality, you know, we got there, you know, we should be dominating teams, but right, you know, for reasons we haven't. Yes, we've touched on the injuries. We've touched on, obviously, form of some people. You know, Kearney been out injured. You know, Steffa Johansson's not been the player that he's been last season. Kevin McDonald, obviously, he's been a bit of a talisman for us there in midfield. Floyd Ayite, you know, it's 3 games in, you know, 4 games out of an injury. Sherry Ojo, unlucky with that shoulder, but he's come back a lot better. And Neskens Cabano is really an impact-type player. One of the things I did notice, which I will touch on, two things that really kind of bother me with our midfield setup at the moment, is that I've never rated Kearney as being a captain. I don't feel he's dominant enough as a person. Was he given the captaincy last season to maybe sort of cement his position into the Fulham side rather than going off somewhere else? Which sometimes I feel can be a wrong decision to make when you need a leader. And what I'm noticing as well is that I think Johansson tries to get the likes of Kevin McDonald, Norwood, Kearney, and who's the other one? Steffen Johansson, all in the same side at the same time.
Right.
And I don't feel that is the right balance for us as a midfield. I still don't think we got it right. So I'm going to go with a 6.
Let me ask you before we move on, Scott, you're talking about Kearney shouldn't be the captain. I actually agree with you. I think it should be McDonald. That's who I would have as the captain. Who would you have as the captain?
Well, I mean, at the moment now, I mean, for me personally, I mean, the person you've got to look at is probably McDonald. He seems to be that type of player that kind of puts a foot in. He seems a dominant leader. For me personally, it would have to be a centre-back for me if we brought in a decent centre-back. But, I mean, I don't think Savisa's ever going to change it all the time that he's at the club. You know, it's always going to be Tom Kearney. So.
Yeah, it is. You're probably right. That's a good point there, Scott. All right, I'm going to go right back to you. This is the problem position. I think we're all going to agree here. It's a striker. We're talking about Abubakar Kamara and Rui Font. Scott, I'm going to give you first shot at this. Rate the strikers.
I'm going to go for a 0 with this because it's been a complete, you know, balls up from the start. And that's nothing personal against Kamara, and that's nothing personal against Font. For me personally, the way that we got into this season, the way that we approached it, the way that we let strikers go and the way that we bought strikers and the way that we've gone into games playing false number nines and, you know, playing either Ayito or Ojo has told you that whatever we've tried doing in that summer window, you know, hasn't worked. And it hasn't. I mean, what have we got today? We've got 2 goals from Kamara, I think, and we've got 1 from Fonte from open play. I think the pair of them scored 3 goals. For me, that's not good enough. I'm not saying it's the want of trying. I thought Kamara was quite busy against Barnsley. He put in quite a bit of an effort, and Saturday, Fonte looked a little bit kind of more comfortable off the ball in that type of position. But as out-and-out strikers go in the situation, for me, it's going to get a big, fat 0. Sorry.
Okay. And Listen, I understand why you're rating that, and I'll go to Emilio in 1 second. What's interesting about these two players is that I feel that they can offer something to Fulham. I think we've seen it. The problem is that when you look at the striker position, you need the goals, and they're not supplying the goals. So that's why I understand why you went the way you did, Scott. It makes sense. It makes sense. But you also talked about that. You also talked about some of the things that they're doing. But if you're going to rate them, I understand why you're rating it that way, because you're looking at the lack of goals.
Yeah, and it was never going to be that way, and we've covered this so many times, and you know it's such a sore point for this season, and I think it's been a sore point for the last couple of seasons. It's a sore point with the owners, and I think it's a sore point with a lot of fans. You know, you go out and you spend the best part of 14, 15 million on two people, you know, a striker that spent majority of time at the second tier French side, and you know, another player that's fouled twice, you know, at this level. And these two are going to fire you to championship greatness season. It's not going to happen. And, you know, and again, that's not being personal against the two. I honestly do think that Kamara, if you used him in a certain way as a kind of an impact player or a strength at running at defenders, you probably get a little bit more out of him. And I'm sure Fonte has a role. But the way that they've done that this season as two strikers or strike force to boost us on for this season has got a big fat zero.
Okay. Emilio, your view on this and give a rating. I do understand why Scott went there, but he also talked about that the possibility that these players can offer something. I still think that they can. But if we're talking about the position, he's making a strong argument why he gave a zero. How about you?
What more can I say, really, to be honest? I can't give much more than that. One or two, to be very honest with you. Of the two, Kamara offers more in terms of pace, strength. Yes, they're very different players, but he can hurt defenders. He can cause, be a nuisance. If only he can keep his composure in front of goal or in those telling positions, we might see a lot of more mature Kamara in the next couple of seasons. Maybe he needs to go out on loan to another club and get some confidence back. But ultimately, you know, he offers, something a little bit different. You know, I've always said he looks and reminds you like Emil Heskey. You know, not necessarily composed in front of goal, but gave defence a bit of problems, was physically strong, has got the pace, though, and that's, we need to use that asset better. You know, stretch defenders, got to run down the channels. That's what we don't do particularly well. And maybe his positional plays are particularly good, but that's all with maturity. And he's got more upside than Font. Font, I give him a minus zero, minus 10, if anything.
Okay.
You know my thoughts are very Font. I just do not like the player. He offers very, very little. I don't see any upside there. I don't buy the fact that he's playing out of position. His contribution is minimal, to say the least.
Okay.
Yes, okay, he's been a couple of us late, but I'll give the striker department one out of 10. But
okay,
if I was to prefer, I prefer Kamara to Font. Font just gives me nothing. Okay. I don't see what he offers, seriously.
All right, let's move on. Let's talk about Savisa, Emilio. Give him a rating halfway through the season.
I'm just going to go boringly down the middle, 5 out of 10. You know, at the end of the day, it's not necessarily his fault that we've got the players that we've got, but I'm fed up of listening to fans, commentators, journalists, and pundits keep saying he's got bad players, therefore he's limited what he can do. I disagree with that. Sometimes good coaches get the best out of bad teams. You know, So Visa's, we've said it time and time again on the show that he's not very flexible, plays only one system, very stubborn. If you're struggling to get gold, or you're struggling to get consistency, change things, for goodness sake. You know, to change your style of football. Try to protect a lead when you're do it well, or try to chase a game when you're 1-0 down. Sunderland 10 days ago springs to mind. But at the end of the day, I've just got concerns that maybe, you know, this coach isn't the be all end all that everyone keeps going on about. I'm fed up with all the sympathy he gets because, you know, these are the players that we've got. It's out of his, and therefore he's make do with the bet in the poor squad. At the end of the day, good coaches get the best out of bad players. I'm not necessarily seeing that consistently happening this season. So 5 out of 10. Stop making excuses, Slavisa. Get on with the job. You know, you're paid to do the job, whether you like the players on the pitch or not. If you don't like it, you know where to go. So 5 out of 10 for me. But it's time to put your head down and focus on getting quality and getting results on the pitch. That's what you're paid to do, not to keep bringing your dirty laundry onto the pitch, which I keep saying time and time again.
Okay. Emilio goes 5 out of 10. Scott, to you.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've got to go the same way. I might be a little bit more generous and give him a 6. Same sort of sentiments as Amido. Really, he's not really firing on all cylinders. I think as a coach, I think there's a lot more that he could have done in that first half of the season that maybe could have got us a few more results. Or, you know, like Amido was saying, using what he's got around him. Good coaches do that. And, you know, I'll bring it back into the arena again. I know that, you know, we've just beaten Cardiff, but if you look at players like Warnock, you know, who are motivators, I'm sure Pulis is going to motivate. Obviously, Middlesbrough, you've got young Johnson up at Bristol City doing a fantastic job there.
Doing a great job.
And are their squads that much, you know, better off than ours? No, really. I look at some of them size up there, Derby as well, you know, and yeah, I do. There have been them problems in the recruitment, but as Milo quite rightly says, he's not got on with it. There's been a lot of sort of wearing of dirty washing, you know, in front of fans and, you know, kind of the club. When I think realistically, he should have kind of got his head down and got on things with a lot more. I'm hoping that now that all this Klein saga, everything is out of the way, and if he does get a little bit more of a say in the January transfer window, we might have, you know, a brighter second half of the season under him. And I'm hoping we do, because I just think that we've got a glorious opportunity there, you know?
Okay, excellent there, Scott. All right, right back to you. We're now going to focus on recruitment, and we're going to talk about Tony Khan. And I think that, again, if we're looking at the entirety of the summer transfer window, it's under his watch. That's why I want to rate Tony and the job of recruitment this summer, building this squad, because to me, we should be looking at that as much as we're looking at the players, as much as we're looking at Savisa. We have to look at the recruitment. Scott, I'm going to start with you. Rate this 1 to 10. Rate Tony Khan here.
Do I go as bad as giving him a number 1? I don't think he intentionally set out to have a poor summer. You know, I've got a feeling his intentions are there. I just feel maybe slightly naive, a little bit inexperienced. And whether that is down to him being kind of misadvised or whether that was him trying to be clever and it backfiring, I don't know. But we certainly, you know, haven't got it right. You know, we sold two assets that were important part of last season. Yes, you know, you're never going to get that money again for Luko, and, you know, you're never going to get that money again for Scott Malone. But it's how you reinvest that money and you look at, obviously, what you've let go and on what you needed to add for that season to push on. And I just feel that, you know, we or Tony Khan, when I say we, I'm talking collectively as the club coaches or, you know, people that handle the finances. You know, we try to be clever by maximising sort of money in areas, and we've got it wrong. We've got it clearly wrong. And I just, you know, and it annoys me to this day that we needed 4 or 5 strategic players for this summer. And, you know, I don't think we're going to get more of a glorious opportunity to push for promotion this year because it's such a poor championship. Or say poor, but a championship where if we'd have started off on a higher foot and we'd established ourselves as a top 2 side, I think we'd still be there now. Because a lot of other teams are sort of floundering or, you know, kind of dropping off or not kicking on as they should have done. And I've got to put some of that blame onto Tony, you know, and if he isn't experienced enough, why, you know, haven't we drafted somebody in that can advise in kind of them areas? So I'm going to be a little bit more generous. So I'm going to give him a 2.
Well, Scott, what's interesting about this, and I was talking to another co-host about recruitment. It's not about spending money. I think the Khans have spent money. They have spent money since they've been here. It's how they spent the money. Is that a fair way to look at it? Because I know fans look at the Khans and they say, well, are they spending money? I think they're spending money. I have problems with how they're spending it.
I think you're right, Russ. As I said, and I've got no I think their intentions are good for Fulham Football Club. You know, if you can honestly say to me what is their first love, then it's always going to be the Jags. You know, you always see a lot more kind of, you know, coverage or involvement with them. I think, you know, Fulham is more sort of Tony's project. But that doesn't matter really. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're still a club. We still need running in the right way. And you know, as far as I'm concerned, Tony is still very inexperienced in this industry. And you know, it wouldn't hurt him to actually draft somebody in of a footballing knowledge that can maybe sort of advise him a bit better. You know, yes, they have spent money. They spent money on the training ground. You know, they bought land. You know, with the new Riverside development, everything they do, you know, I think their intentions are good for the club. They want to spend money.
Right.
You know, they're just spending it in the wrong areas, I think. Yeah. And I think we tried to be clever this summer, and it's majorly backfired.
Listen, and I'm glad that you said it that way, Scott, because I look at it, and I do agree that Tony and the people underneath him, that their intentions are very good. They obviously want the best for Fulham Football Club. I just think that the players that they're bringing in, it just hasn't worked. And I have to question the amount of money that they spent on the players that they spent. I know that they're going to spend the money. This isn't about them being cheap. It's how they're spending it. They're just not spending it, I think, the right way. And I think we're hurting because of it. And we can just look at the striker position as unfortunately a situation that I think they got it wrong. They spent a lot of money on these two strikers, and it's not paying off at this point.
No.
Emilio, over to you. I want to get your thoughts on Tony Khan. He is the vice chairman and director of football operations of Fulham Football Club. So talking about recruitment is underneath him. So give him a rating.
Ultimately, he's going to be measured on the success on the pitch. You know, at the end of the day, it's, you know, he felt that, you know, his leadership team, his advisors are giving him the right recommendations. He's sanctioning the players. Obviously, the players haven't performed to their best, to their capabilities, and that's the reason why we're in mid-table. So ultimately, based on that, we have to say that basically the players that we've recruited haven't been good enough. So that's been, you know, widely publicised the last few months on various podcasts, including Cottage Talk. But you know, at the end of the day, I take a different perspective. You know, yes, he's naive. Maybe this is a kick up the backside. You know, I agree that the Khans have spent money, but haven't spent it wisely or in the correct departments or with the right mindset. So if we get a stronger set of advisors, stronger set of people in the director rooms, we might get better decisions that will result in better quality players coming through. But I like the fact that he engages with the fans. That's a big plus. The Fulham Supporters Trust engage often with the Fulham Football Club, and Tony Khan's a big buyer of that. So I'm looking at other perspectives of Tony Khan, rather than just purely solely at recruitment. Let's look at all the other factors of trying to, you know, increase the brand awareness of Fulham Football Club, trying to increase the profile of Fulham Football Club, trying to attract, you know, if you increase the brand of the club, you will attract better quality players. So, and then if you show the right intentions, you can attract the right players, you can then perform better on the pitch, and then you can have more successful times ahead. So net, you know, I'm not going to rate him just purely on the poor recruitment. So I'm also giving him some positive feedback on the fact that he does engage with the public and trying to do the right things for the football club. So net, I'm going to give him a 5.5 out of 10,
okay,
to be honest. And maybe there'll be lessons learned from the Klein era, and that we can move forward and hopefully invest better in January. But to my earlier point, where's the money going to come from?
Okay.
Where's the money going to come from to buy the players that we need to strengthen the squad to push for a playoff place? You know, I can't see us getting the players that we need without having to sell.
Well, let's hope that we don't have to sell the two players that I think you're thinking about there, Emilio, because I think we need both of those players. We're talking about Ryan Sessegnon and Tom Kearney, but I understand why you're concerned about that. All right, guys, let's move on with our midseason review. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a couple categories together. Basically, it's positive and a negative. So, Scott, I'm going to start with you. Let's start with your player of the season and the player that has been the biggest disappointment. And on top of what I'm also going to do, you actually put a post up on Friends of Fulham, and I'm going to read some commentary from one poster, from Matt Ten, and I'm going to share what he had to say about these two, and then I'll go to you. Matt actually put his player of the season so far as being Kevin McDonald, and his player that has been the biggest disappointment is Rui Font. So I'll go to you. Who is your player of the season so far, and also the biggest disappointment?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I'm honest, I think Matt's got that quite spot on. I think in times of need this season, I think McDonald's been a figure within that side when the team's been playing poorly or we've needed someone to take him by the scruff of the neck. He's always been the one, game in, game out. Yes, he's only human. There's been a couple of mistakes from him, but you know, from game to game, Kevin McDonald has always been that guy in the centre of that park.
Consistent, consistent.
Taking leadership, putting his foot on the ball, you know, calming the situation down, you know, and just basically sort of pushing people on. And that's been consistent, like you say. You know, biggest disappointment, I think, you know, has got to be Rui Font. I think that's everybody's biggest disappointment. But again, can you blame him as an individual? Not really. Is it the way that he's been brought into the club? Possibly. But for the money we spent, that puts a bigger kind of price on his shoulders, Russ, for me.
Sure.
You know, and at the moment, we've got nothing in return. So I think he's right there.
Okay. Over to you, Emilio. Do you agree with Matt and also Scott on player of the season and the biggest disappointment, or do you have other players here?
I think for player of the season, it'd be hard to not to give it to Kevin McDonald for the reasons that Scott said. And, you know, at the end of the day, who else has performed consistently and played consistently throughout the season? There's nobody else. I think I'm scratching my head to find out anyone else who's close to Kevin McDonald. So I think that's a no-brainer. Second one, the biggest disappointment. Yes, I think Font has been, and you know, everyone knows my views about Font, but my biggest disappointment is Tom Kearney. You know, yes, he's had an injury, but he's not the Tom Kearney we know since he's come back from injury. He's slow. He's not challenging. He's sort of, he's more careless with his passing. His goals have dried up. His assists have dried up. You know, he's, you know, the fact that he's played only maybe you could argue maybe a half of the first half of the season, he's been extremely disappointing. To be honest, I can't remember many games that he's won man of the match. Last season, he was winning man of the match week in, week out with Kevin McDonald. This season's complete opposite. So is there something fundamentally not right there with Kevin? I think I mentioned it on Saturday. He just didn't seem the Tom Kearney that we know, you know, with that level of passion. He seems something's playing on his mind. I'm not sure. I'm not trying to speculate that he might be going in January, but something doesn't feel right here. And I've not seen anywhere near Tom Kearney playing at his best this season. And other than the game of Gateway to Ipswich before he picked up his knock, that he was outstanding with him and Johansson. But disappointing. I'd probably say he's probably been my biggest disappointment. Captain, high expectations. We bent over backwards to keep him in the summer. Yes, he picked up a knock, but his performances have been well below par. And so, to be honest, I will say he's been my biggest disappointment this season.
Okay, interesting. Scott, what are your thoughts about Kearney? I just want to say for the record, we are doing this. This is our midseason review, so we're looking at an entire half a season. And to be honest, he did play well. He looked better in the match against Cardiff City. But I see where Emilio's going on this. What are your thoughts here?
Yeah, I mean, he's not been the player that he was last season. I mean, can I say this without it being taken the wrong way? Is he really that good, or was last season just a one-off for him? Are we ever going to see that type of season from Tom Kearney again? I'm not too sure. Yes, I mean, he's been subject to the knee injury, but then I was also told that, I think from his mum was speaking to somebody, that he's also had a niggling little problem with his hip as well. So a lot of the twisting and turning he does, that's been sort of agitating him this season as well. So I don't know with him. He's a bit of a sort of grey area. We don't know what's kind of up with him. But he's a guy that we need to be sort of performing like he did last season if we're going to go anywhere. You know?
Totally.
I'm just hoping that it's a series of injuries and we're now starting to see him come out the other side of that now.
That's what I hope, Scott. And to be honest with you, I was encouraged by what I saw at Cardiff City, because he started to look like Kearney from last season. And just a shot seemed like a typical shot from him from last season, even though he missed, he barely missed. But I had not seen that type of shot from him for the majority of the season. That, to me, was an encouraging sign, and the way he played was encouraging. So hopefully we are seeing the other side of it. But it's fair for Emilio to bring up Kearney to talk about it, because it hasn't been at the level that we saw last season, and probably injuries are a part of it. All right, yeah. Guys, let's move on. Scott, I'm going to go right back to you. It's funny because I'm looking at this and I think it's going to be a no-brainer who the worst summer signing is, but who was the best summer signing? So let me ask you, best summer signing and worst summer signing?
I'm going to have to try and think now. So, I mean, we brought Callis and that back. Throw some names at me, Russ, because I'm kind of like...
Sure. Callis, Norwood would be one that would strike me. I guess we could also put in, we're talking about Kamara, we're talking about Font.
Yeah. But my brain was all over the place. I just think about other things. But I'm actually going to go with Ojo for me. Before the shoulder injury, I think he was just getting into his stride, and obviously he got pulled out of the game. But what I've seen of him lately is that he's starting to show that kind of Premiership quality. I think that Liverpool see in that. He's never going to be in a Luko, but for me, he's got. You know, he's got a better sort of finish in that final third. But he's very adventurous as a winger or however you play him in that side. He likes to cut in. He's not frightened to take a shot from outside the box. You know, and whether he, you know, and I think we all know that he mishit that sort of shot against Barnsley or whatever. But, you know, he was in that position to make that happen. And we lack players like that. I mean, I was watching Kearney against Barnsley and he wanted four touches before he tapped it into the net when he could have scored after two. And, you know, very frustrating, but he brings something a bit different this season. He brings a bit of flair. He brings a bit of change.
Scott, how about aggressiveness? Is that a good word to use?
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't give up. I mean, that's one of the things we lacked with Aluko, that even though his final third wasn't that good, if he lost the ball, he'd always track back and kind of he'd stick his foot in and he'd push his body back towards a player to sort of halt the play and stuff like that. And Ojo's kind of... He's showing them kind of temperaments now as well. He's getting stuck in. You know, he's putting a foot on the ball. And I'm starting to like what I see. And I think as the season goes on, I think we're going to see a much better player in Ojo.
Okay. And I'm assuming worst summer signing has to be Rui Font. We've already kind of talked about that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, for me, it's mainly for the money spent with sure. Font. I mean, we could say the same about Kamara, but... You know, his abilities, Russ. He's come from a second tier French team, and we know that, you know, he's not up there on a pedestal with Font. But for me, it's got to be Font.
It's got to be Font. Okay. Emilio, how about you?
Yeah, in terms of the best summer signing, there isn't really much competition, really, if let's be very honest. Really, it's between Norwood and Ojo, the other player. Half the other players haven't even got any game time. Where's Molo these days? You know, Jordan Graham, we've never seen come onto the pitch. So it's... To be honest, you know, Norwood's not done a bad job. I thought, I agree. OJ is probably the best of the summer signings, but I think let's give Norwood a bit of credit as well. I think Norwood's had a reasonably good season. I think he's very confident with penalties. That's a positive. So he's you can see his confidence from the penalty spot. At times his passing is simple, it reminds me a bit like Danny Murphy. Does the simple things. Well, not spectacular, but Danny Murphy wasn't spectacular in our Premier League days. He just did the simple things well. Was competent at taking penalties, and he was a good leader on the pitch. Or Norwood has similar attributes to Murphy. So yeah, hopefully we can keep Norwood for next season. I think I'd like to let's extend him, let's keep him at Fulham Football Club. So I think the fans are starting to warm to him. You know, we know he can score goals from set pieces, and you know, at the end of the day, he's good cover for Kearney and McDonald. So ultimately, yeah, I think that's, I just want to give a bit of a call out there for Norwood. As far as worst summer signing, well, I think I've said it since August. I think we know who it is. So.
Yeah, I get you there, my friend. All right, I'm going to go right back to you. This one's going to be interesting. These two. Match of the season and which match has been the biggest disaster? I just thought of this. I'm like, there's no question in my mind which one was the biggest disaster. I have a feeling... I'm going to be in agreement with you guys once you say that, but I'm curious what you're going to say. But I'll start with you, Emilio. Match of the season and the match that was the biggest disaster, the worst loss.
I think there's two ways to look at the match of the season. You can look at it from an entertainment value, and I think 5-4 a win to Sheffield United away probably up there. But in terms of class and pure perfection, I'm going to say Ipswich away. The fact that right at the beginning of the season, I was there. Ipswich were top of the league. I think they had a 100% record, 4 wins out of 4. We just totally dominated that game. We were the team that we were last season. Our passing was exquisite. Johansson and Kenny were clicking. We just bossed the whole game from start to finish. we couldn't do anything better in that game. The fact that we dominated on and away against the team that were leading the division and had a 100% record, to me, that was the best quality match of the season in terms of pure class and quality. In terms of entertainment, it's got to be the Sheffield United game. But, you know, there's two perspectives of looking at this match of the season. And the biggest disaster, I think, has got to be at the Stadium of Light. It's got to be, you know, the fact that we just... You know, I thought away to Sunderland in my opinion. I think that was just awful. You know, we didn't compete. We offered very little. It was widely predicted by many fans that we would lose there, and we did. Some people made a profit from betting against our team, but that's another story. But my view is that match was a disaster. It's embarrassing. The fact that this team had not won at home for 365 days almost, and lo and behold, as Fulhamish style, we give them their first win in 12 months. But not only was it a disaster, it was just embarrassing. That's 3 points we've thrown away in that game alone. And again, it goes back to Slavisa. Why didn't he change something in that game? Why didn't he look at a plan B to get something out of that game? No, he didn't. He continued to persevere. We offered very little. And we got our just desserts and losing that game embarrassingly against arguably the worst team in the division. So that's my worst, biggest disaster game-wise.
Okay, excellent. I'm just going to mention this on from Friends of Fulham. Matt Hatch chimed in, and he actually has... best match so far as being the Cardiff City match. And he has the worst match being the Brentford match. That's the one that I was thinking of, Emilio. I was thinking of the Brentford match, but you brought up another bad one, obviously, with the Sunderland match. How about you, Scott?
Yeah, I mean, if we start with the worst game, I mean, for me...
Yeah, let's start there.
I can't stomach losing against Brentford or QPR at the best of times. But for me, Brentford, I know it kind of went wrong. If Odoi wasn't sent off, would it have been a different story? Possibly. But, you know, based on our current form at the moment, I mean, we got no right going to Brentford and beating them at the moment. They're a good footballing side. You know, they went and beat, I think, Villa again yesterday. Was it 2-1? You know, they're a good side at home. I'm taking nothing against them. It's, you know, they're going to be out there with us this season. I think for most fans, it's because it's the rivalry and everything else. You know, it's any loss, you can never stomach it. Wasn't the worst. I'm with Emilio. The worst for me is the Sunderland game. I think we'd already lost that before we travelled up there. You know, a lot of negativity flying around from the fans. And, you know, I'm not into all this kind of, you know, if you're negative, the team's going to be negative. I just, you know, every fan knew that, you know, leading up to this game, weeks before, months before, you know, to the day or a day before, it's been a year since they won at Stadium of Light. You know, who do they need to rock up? Fulham. You know, and I think it's my Christmas do that day as well, when they completely, you know, they balls that up for me. I was in a mood for the rest of the evening. And, you know, and to top it off, and like Emilio says, you know, we offered nothing against probably one of the worst teams in the division. And it was Coleman and Simon, and I'm not taking anything away from them, you know. And to top it off, right, it was an ex-Fulham player that we let go from the academy scores, right? You know, and I'm thinking about some dross that I've looked over, you know, I've watched over the years from, you know, back in, you know, in the early days and stuff when we were rubbish. And this one for me, you know, was it the Huddleston haircut as well? You know, the guy hadn't cut his hair for like 7 years. When you need a haircut, who's going to rock up? Fulham. It was one of those games for me. So that's got to go down as one of my worst.
Okay. I understand why both of you went there. I just went to Brentford because I thought that was bad. But you brought up very good reasons why it should be considered Sunderland being the worst for everything you guys just went through. It was horrific. And both of them are horrific. So I could understand why either one is thought of in that way. All right, guys. The last part of this show, we're going to be talking about the second half of the season. We've gone through the midseason review. We've talked about rating the players. We talked about player of the season, positives and negatives in several categories. But let's look forward. What do we have to look forward to? What do Fulham need to do to get into the top six? What do they need in January? Now, we've talked about this several times. Emilio, I'm going to start with you. You are Tony Khan. What do you do here? What do you give Slavisa? Because he's in charge. It's under his umbrella. So that's why I'm talking about Tony. You're in his position. What are the needs in January?
I think obviously goals. You know, I think we need to be more clinical in front of goal. You know, everyone, there's rumours that maybe we're going to be back in for Dwight Gale. I honestly can't see, A, where we're going to get the money from, and B, Newcastle struggling in the Premier League, will they release him? So, you know, in my mind, you know, I've not heard any massive speculation, but a Tom Kearney swap with Dwight Gale of some capacity, I've heard being touted out there. You know, so just throwing out some suggestions. I think we need some more firepower up front. You know, that goes without saying. My view is, as long as you can score more than you can concede, that wins your games. Not clean sheets don't win your games. Scoring more goals than you concede wins your games. And we just haven't had enough quality up front. We're not scoring enough goals and we're not killing games off. There are many games we've taken the lead, but haven't had enough quality or enough creativity to score a second, perhaps possibly a third, and close the game out like we did last season. So, you know, my view is get the striker in there. I don't think we'll invest in a goalkeeper. I think we'll keep with what we've got. I'm not necessarily sure we're necessarily going to get the centre-back that we need. I think ultimately, if we can invest big time, maybe we'll throw our eggs into one basket and get a clinical striker or even a hold-up striker, a Chris Martin type. We've talked about this before in the past, and I know he's cheap at the moment. He's available. Not sure whether he'll come back to Craven Cottage, but ultimately, I think we're a weaker side without him. You know, love him or hate him, you know, we've missed Chris Martin this season. And, you know, I'm always perishing the thought, if we had Chris Martin up front for the best part of the season, I think we'd have a lot more points in the tank. And his hold-up play, his positional play, a lot more professional, a lot more aware, and a lot more composed as well than what we've got at the moment. So Scott mentioned at the beginning of the show, we haven't replaced, you know, players that we've sold with the right players, and that's why we are where we are. But put your eggs in one basket, get the right player up front. Don't get all these small, cheap signings, you know, in the hope that they'll gel. We haven't got time to gel. We've got to get someone who's going to hit the ground running. Yep. Someone who's very competent at this level. Someone's experienced at this level, and you know, and hope that person can make a difference. So, I'm not expecting massive changes, massive signings, because ultimately we haven't got time to spare. We need someone who, like I said, hit the ground running, get, you know, stabilize a team somewhat, and be able to be a little bit more clinical. If we can kill games off and pick up 3 points regularly, then that's going to push you up the table. Keeping clean sheets but not scoring the other end is only going to get you 1 point. So that's where our focus needs to be. But we need to get a proven set of players, or at least one player who's capable of playing in the Championship, or has played in the Championship. That's going to be a challenge. But supposedly Tony Khan and the recruitment team have got their players lined up. So let's see.
Let's hope so, my friend. But I see where you're going on this. You're more concerned about getting that goal scored because we need goals. But you've obviously also made it clear that we could use a center back as well. But if you were going to do it, you would put your eggs in that basket. I understand where you're going there. All right, Scott, over to you. I'm going to put you in the shoes of Tony Khan. What are you doing in January?
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, it's an important window. I know not a lot moves in this window. Prices are high. You know, it really is a kind of a window where, you know, if you do need, you know, that additional odd player to boost you to kind of promotion, or, you know, to keep yourself out of relegation, or, you know, to kind of make a push like we were doing, then it's an ideal time for us. But for me, you know, I would expect, or I'm hoping, that we've got targets lined up already. We've had time. We know what we want. And I'm expecting us to kind of hopefully hit the ground running once January opens and we've got a few lined up. I think the problem that Tony Khan's got is that you can make the mistake of, you know, like Milo said, going out and buying, you know, sort of little players here, little players there. We don't need that in this window. We need two or three, you know, experienced players that are going to make a difference and hit the ground running. Emilio's right in the fact that we need a Chris Martin type player. As much as fans don't want to accept it, I mean, he is going for $6 million at the moment, or they've turned around and said, you know, and again, that is a kind of option which I think is within budget, and you know what you're going to get. It's most likely not going to happen, but we need to be looking at that type of player. Not necessarily someone's going to go and get you another 30 goals from now to the end of the season, but a Chris Martin type player that can hold a ball up and maybe bring a Font into the game, or, you know, can bring a Kamara into the game, and all of a sudden you start piecing bits together and a squad kicks on. We've got that danger there of kind of killing the balance again, but we've got to be so right in who we bring in. I'd like to see a centre back, possibly, or at least someone that can challenge the two at the back. Possibly, you know, a hold up midfield. A hold up striker. I don't know. I really don't know where they're going to go with it, but I feel that's the kind of areas that we need to improve and we need to get done quickly within the January transfer window. But at the same time, we've got to try and hold on to a few assets, you know?
Right. I totally agree, Scott. I'm going to throw out another position. We've talked about this before. What about left back? Rafasaurus. Where's Rafasaurus? For whatever reason, we're not seeing Rafasaurus. So let me ask you, would you consider bringing in another left back, or are you okay with Dennis Odoi? But the situation you guys were already talking about, we are thin at fullback in general, at the two fullback positions.
Yeah, we are. I completely overlooked that position. And I think a left back is probably of a high priority. Is it an area that they think they can get away with until the end of the season by either playing Odoi there or keeping Sessegnon at left back? Because he seems to like him there for whatever reasons. It may not be a priority until he's gone or sold. I really don't know how they're going to think about this in January, but it's fine margins here of how we get this right for me. I think we need to get a spot on. And for us, and you know, it's like anything, we need to win games. We need to stop conceding and scoring more goals. So, you know, that's the balance they've got to get right. We've got to turn this kind of shrapnel that we've got into someone that goes out and can't hold on to a lead for no longer than 5-10 minutes, to a solid side that can go and get two goals and start killing games off.
Okay, excellent there, Scott. So you're kind of going on the same wavelength as Emilio. It's about the goals. I know you mentioned centre-back too, but they need to be able to kill games off. And to do that, you need to score more goals, and they need that player. And I'm the one that has said this. I think we miss Chris Martin, not Chris Martin the person, Chris Martin, the hold-up striker that he was. That's what they miss. I think if you bring in someone, if it's not him, someone that can do that skill set, I think that would really help Fulham. But they need to get this business done early, as soon as possible. But, Scott, I'm going to go back to you because I agree with you on this. If they're going to bring in players, please don't bring in the Petzoses of the world. Please bring in impact players. Don't waste your time with squad players. Bring in players that are going to make an impact. I think you're going to agree with me on that.
Yeah. If we go doing that again and we start bringing in the Kamaras and the Saws and, you know, just players to bulk out positions for cover, we're not going to go anywhere. We'll remain as we are. The reason we're in this position is because we failed to bring that kind of caliber player in the summer. And if they have any intention of pushing on to the playoffs, which I feel this season is going to be a lot tougher because more aggressive, those players have to come in January. If they don't, then mid-table mediocrity is where we're going to finish.
Okay, fair enough there, Scott. So with all that said, let's go to predictions for the second half of the season. Emilio, I will start with you. What is your prediction for Fulham for the rest of the season? Where will they end up in May?
Interesting question. I think if you actually look, we've got we played 24 games and we've got, I think, 35 points. You know, ultimately, I've looked at the home fixtures that are coming up the rest of the season. That we've got a lot of home games against the teams above us, like the Wolverhamptons of this world, Leeds, Aston Villa, we've still got to play at home. We've got Ipswich Town next week. So there's games there that, you know, and we've got quite a few home games against teams below. So my view is you start by winning your home games. If we play away from home more often like we did against Cardiff, Ipswich Town earlier in the season, then we can still be productive and rewarded away from home. So, you know, there's nothing to say we can't get another 45 points from our remaining 23 games. That's 2 points per game. That will get us to 80 points. Is 80 points going to be sufficient to get you top six? Maybe touch and go, you know. So I honestly think, you know, unless we've got to have a better second half of the season this year than we did last year, in my opinion. And so I'm not sure we've actually got enough there. But, you know, realistically, I think we can get top eight at best. But, you know, what's stopping us getting those 45 points from the remaining 22 games? 2 points a game, it's doable given the amount of home games we've got against teams below us and those six points against teams above us. So it's doable, but we need to invest in January and get the right striker. But let's also bear in mind, we haven't played well most of the first half of the season. There's only been a handful of games that spring to mind that we played particularly well, yet we're still in contention. So we talked earlier at the beginning of the programme, who's going to be that team outside the top six who's going to sneak in there? it may be us. You mentioned Preston, Russ. Yep. What's stopping it being Fulham? Get a run point. Together, gets four or five consecutive wins. That could be us. Derby County, beginning of November, middle of November, they were below us in the league when we played them at Craven Cottage. Now they're 10 points clear of us.
Okay.
Just because they've had back-to-back wins, you know, four or five consecutive wins. That's all you need in this division. And January, early February, there's an opportunity to get those four to five consecutive wins.
Okay, excellent there. Emilio, okay. Scott, what is your prediction for the rest of the season? Obviously, you made it clear. For them to really contend for top six, January is crucial, the recruitment. I completely agree with you. But still, I want a prediction. Just where do you see we're going to end up in May?
If we get January spot on, I still feel that we can push for the top six. I feel that the top six is a little bit more aggressive this season. You've got a few teams up there that fell away last season, like Leeds or whatever, that seem to winning. But I think if we get the ingredients right and we have a better second half of the season, which I feel we can, there's a couple of elements that need to change there, which is the recruitment and the mentality, right, I think, of Djokanovic. I do think we can challenge. We did it last season, and I feel we can do it again this season. Quite rightly, what you're saying. I looked at Cardiff when we drew them at home, and I keep saying to myself, how are they up there? A few of the other sides, Derby, weren't that great. How are they up there? Some of them other teams are not performing well, but they're up there. Preston, I mean, they were nothing great. We just made hard work of it at home. All these sides, I feel that if we are firing on all cylinders, are beatable. And I'm probably being slightly biased because I'm a Fulham fan, but I just feel that we're averagely better on our day than most of them teams. But that day has to be every weekend.
Sure.
Not just once every six or seven games, like reading some
I
of
totally
the
I totally agree, Scott. It's got to be consistent. Listen, yeah. you and Amelia both said there have only been a handful of very good performances, and that's accurate.
Yeah. I mean, I was
they
reading
need
back.
To be more consistent.
Yeah. I was reading back through a member on Friends of Fulham called Terry R. Now, what he does is he does a lead up to games at the weekend. He goes on all the forums and he collects all the feedback, and he does like an after game one as well, with their thoughts on the game. And I mean, you look at the Cardiff fans, and I mean, it was post after post that, this is the best side we've seen down here. Forget Wolves. On their day, Fulham are the team in the Championship. And I do firmly believe that. But yep. The problem is, Wolves do it every week in, every week
exactly.
out. They win 1-0, they win 2-0, they win 2-1. All right, they drew at Millwall. But every week, they're doing it consistently. It's no good to us being that team once every six, 7 weeks. Everyone goes, look, it's a Barcelona in the Championship. It's not going to win your titles. It's not going to win your promotion.
Right.
So for me, next season, the consistency and, what we do in January and... Also, I will say that the mindset of Djokanovic, if we can get him three ingredients right, I do believe that we can push for a top six.
Okay.
Forget automatics now, it's not going to happen. But I believe if we get that right, we can push.
Okay, excellent. And listen, I was one that predicted automatic promotion, but there's no way that's happening. So I'm not against where you're going on this, Scott, because I think that there's still an opportunity. But I'm with you 100%. It's going to come down to the recruitment. If they get it right, then we have a chance, but they need to be consistent. Like you said, Wolves are doing it every week. And it's all nice that teams, fans are saying that this is the best team we've seen here. And I love that, but that doesn't win you anything. That doesn't win you automatic promotion, obviously, because we're not going to get that. But to win you promotion, you have to be doing it consistently. That's why Wolves are where they are, Scott. So I'm glad that you did that.
And it annoys me when a lot of people are coming out saying that this Wolves side, are, kind of, and I don't see where they get it from, are better than the side that Tagana put together. It's a load of rubbish. They are nowhere near that kind of level that Tagana had. They're a good side, Wolves. They spent some decent money, but they're not great. That's why I keep coming back to this season, and I will keep saying it, whether the Khans are listening to this, whether they've missed an absolute glorious opportunity of getting out of this Championship, because I feel it's one of the most easiest seasons to do so. And something where we should have got so right, we got so wrong.
Right. Very good point there, Scott. All right. Guys, it is time to wrap up the show. Before we go, I definitely want to get your final thoughts. First, over to Emilio. Emilio, great show. Thank you for joining me. Final thoughts before we go.
Well, thanks for having me on the show again. So, yeah, good, yeah, enjoyed the show. It's good to reflect, and I think we've had some good debate. I think there's a bit of upside here. I think we've got reason to be encouraged. We're going into the January transfer window next week with some optimism. Performances are starting to improve. You know, maybe we're starting to see a little bit more, you know, a bit more of a stable setup from Savisa as well. So maybe, you know, players are back from injury, and these are all sort of ticks in the box. These are all the attributes that we need. Ojo's back from injury. Kearney's hopefully starting to pick up some form. Johansson, let's give him some credit. He's had a good two or three games as well, you know, after having a disappointing October and November. So players are back from injury. Squad's more stable. Performances are reflecting on the fact that we've got room for optimism there. So overall, I'm looking forward to 2018. Whether we've got enough to get into the playoffs remains to be seen. But I think we've got to look up, not down. So let's stay optimistic. Let's support our team as we always do, and let's start 2018 like we started 2017.
Okay, excellent there, Emilio. Scott, your final thoughts before we go.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit sort of more positivity around. We've got the January transfer window coming up, and I think what Milo says, we've got sort of Johansson looking a bit more sharper now. You know, Kearney seems to be returning from injury. You know, he's looking a bit more interested. And if we can get them key ingredients right in January, I think from a positive angle, we can just push through and hopefully sort of, you know, start making a push for these playoffs, because it's not, you know, it's quite realistic. But I say, you know, for me, it's all about this January transfer window. I know for some people it's not important, and it's like, well, we can't buy players. But it's a time for us to do it. If they honestly believe that we're going to push on for the end of the season, then January has to be. I don't care about the other clubs. January has to be key for Fulham.
I totally agree, Scott. It's funny because I know so many people look at the other clubs. Forget the other clubs. It's what Fulham do right now. And Fulham need to take care of their business and hopefully do it sooner than later and get it right. And if they get it right, then maybe we're talking about something special in May. But until they do, then we're just talking about it. They need to get it right. So I'm glad that we're talking about it in that way. I totally agree with you 100% there, Mr. Tanfield. All right. Great show, guys. But it is time to go. For Scott Tanfield from Friends of Fulham and Emilio Dinello, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.